Well, Smash Mouth and the Spin Doctors live at the venue at River Cree on October 19th. And Eric Shankman of the Spin Doctors joins me now. Thank you so much for taking the time.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
Who were some of your biggest influences musically growing up? And did it sort of shape the way you play guitar?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely. I have lots of influences. A couple things. My dad was a classical cellist. So there's like a sort of a symphony thing. All the rock music that had symphonies on it, I grew up with because my dad had all those records. So Beatles, Zappa, you know, anything that was fancy, my father had a record. So that stuff. But then as a guitar player, Clapton, Jimi Hendrix, old blues, and then, you know, jazz guitar players too. So pretty wide.
A little bit wide of everything.
Yeah, very much so.
The Spin Doctors had, you know, massive success in the early 90s. You had Two Princes and Little Miss Can't Be Wrong. Was it kind of a sudden rise to fame? Like, how did you handle that?
Yeah, it was pretty quick for that song. Although, so the band started in like 87, I think. We had like sort of 3 or 4 years where we were playing mostly exclusively in New York City in bars. And then we started to, you know, sort of get out of the city. You know, after a couple of years, we started driving to certain towns and so forth. So for that period, we were like a total club band and we were very popular, very much like the opposite of how those songs probably came off when they hit the radio hard. When they hit the radio really hard, then we became like an MTV band pretty much right away. And we were exposed to a huge audience. It was freaky because, you know, so we kind of lost our core audience when that happened. It was definitely a lot. Although, having said that, we all knew that if Two Princes ever hit the airwaves, that something good would happen because it always just was a great song.
Now, I read somewhere that said anyone looking for a sequel to that album would be disappointed because you got guys consciously choose to make different sounding albums. Why is the reasoning behind that? Or is it just because, you know, it's you guys evolving?
Yeah, you know, I'm not really sure what the reason. The band's been through a few different periods. So at the beginning, we were like a club band or a bar band. And we were a pretty serious, like, you know, kind of rock, almost like a punk rock ethic band. I know it's hard to believe, but it's true. We would always go against what somebody wanted us to do. In other words, you know, like Pocketful of Kryptonite, after that record, the record company hit us up too fast for the next record. We were just kind of like really sort of freaked out in the stage of having this big record and probably would have been the best move on their part for all parties concerned if they had to just step back and said, you know what, guys, don't worry about it. We'll keep working this record for another year. Then probably things would have worked out differently. But as it was, they were like super hot on, you got to make another record, which of course completely flustered us because we actually tried to make another record like the record before, but we didn't want to. So it was sort of like this sort of, you know, this sort of bad train wreck. And then after that, I wasn't even in the band for 6 years. I quit. So they made a couple other records that didn't sound like the first record either because we didn't even have the original guys together. So I would contend that nobody would be disappointed if they heard any record that we made after 2005. So we made a record called Nice Talking to Me, which never really saw the light of day. That record actually has a lot in common with Pocketful of Kryptonite, although it's a little, maybe it's trying a little too hard, but not that much. And then we made a blues record, which has a lot of the ethics of the first record. I would say anybody would be happy with that, but it would also disappoint you maybe because it doesn't sound like the first one. However, now having said all of that, we actually are sitting on a record right now that actually reminds me more of Pocketful of Kryptonite than anything we've done since then. And it's coming out next year. So for anybody that has that opinion and is still alive, check out the record that's coming out next year, y'all.
Way to make me feel old with that one comment.
Well, you think you feel old. How do you think I feel?
You have collaborated with a variety of artists and stuff over the years. What's a collaboration that sort of stands out in your mind?
I did a lot of work with my very good friend, who's a really freaky dude from the 60s, Corky Lang. He's the drummer from the band Mountain. He wrote Mississippi Queen. And we've done a lot of collaboration over the years, which I thoroughly enjoy. I love working with Corky. I would say he's my favorite collaborator. But I've done a lot of other stuff, too, as has everybody else. I collaborated with this really crazy avant-garde jazz New York guy named Kip Hanrahan. And I was in his band for a minute. And that was totally killer because he brings people from all different angles together in a musical project, which is really what I really like, actually. I like doing that. And so I would carry on to just say, like, every collaboration I've been involved with is good for me. So, I mean, you know, the one with Corky, though, I would point to, because that also, we had a trio for a minute. It was me and him and Noel Redding from the Jimi Hendrix Experience. And that was just an amazing collaboration, because you got this guy from the 90s and these two guys from the 60s. And they were like freaky dudes. And I got to play with a 60s rhythm section for a couple of years, which is a really different thing. You know, in the 60s, the rhythm sections, they just didn't play the same way that they play now. It wasn't so much backbeat. It was sort of more around the backbeat. So I would point to that as my favorite collaboration outside of the Spin Doctors, I think.
When was the last time you were in Edmonton?
The last time that we were in Edmonton, or the last time I was in Edmonton was the last time we were in Edmonton, which I think we drove through it. So that would have been, I just remember, because we were all freaking out because there was so much good Vietnamese food between Edmonton and Calgary.
True.
And I was trying to tell the guys, because I grew up in Toronto, and I was like, this is from, like, we had this huge immigration influx when I was in high school, and we got some of the best food in that deal. So I would say, you know, my biggest memory is like amazing Vietnamese food last time I was in Edmonton. I think it's going to be really cool. I love playing in Canada. We don't do it enough. So I would say we were there 6 or 7 years ago. We're going to make up for it by hitting this next gig, and hopefully we get a good turnout and we can turn some people on, because the band really sounds great these days. In fact, both bands do. I really like Smash Mouth too. We do a lot of work with them. But the Spins, we've really sort of taken on a new life of our own in the last 3 years. We play a lot of the new material, but we also play all the stuff that everybody wants to hear. So it'll be awesome.
The best of both worlds, then. That's October 19th.
The best of both worlds.
There you go. The venue at River Cree. Eric, thank you for taking the time once again today.
That's so cool. It's really, do you remember social studies? Did you have to take that too?
Yes.
In Canadian schools?
Yes.
You just reminded me, because I took in the eighth grade, I had the social studies class, and I did a huge project on the Cree Nation, actually.
Oh,
Alberta.
Yes.
And you just reminded me by saying Cree. So, yeah. So cheers to everybody, and a special shout out to all the Cree Nation.
Tansay,
I'm back at you. To all my Canadian brothers and friends, and all, on behalf of the Spin Doctors, come out and see us. We will rock you.